You're listening to Fakeologist's Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. To participate in the chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. Each day, we compress and upload the day's chat, be it big or small. Leave a quick message, do a whole show. All are welcome when it's related to fakeology. Now, on with today's audio.
2212.
How's that?
Yeah, for some reason you were on a server mute.
Oh.
But that's fixed
now.
I
don't know what that means.
If you've got a moderator status, you can server mute people. And I right-clicked your thing just now, and it said server mute. So I don't think it was resetting the computer that fixed it. I think if I'd have checked that, I could have fixed that. First time around. That's all right. How you been anyway?
I've been good. Pretty good. I've got something funny to tell you.
Oh, yeah? Let me guess. You were present at the Burke Street car attack where one of your family members were.
No, it's just I have this recharge card for my phone and it says there's a gray part you have to scratch off, right? And it says scratch and in brackets it says don't sniff. And then it says the panel below. I just thought that was funny.
What is this, a scratchy?
Scratch, don't sniff. It's a recharge, phone recharge.
Ah, I see. Well, they're warning you about sniffing. Why would
there's
they have
retards
to put that
out
on
there who sniff it. Yeah, because, yeah, you know, yeah. People.
But why would they have to put that warning there? Would that be dangerous for people to?
I think they're probably covering themselves in case someone decides to sue them for some sniff-related injury.
A sniff-related injury. Yeah, well, it is 2017. Who knows what? Yep. Who knows what damage? The reason I ask about the Burke Street thing is I was just listening to a PK interview just today. Someone sent me a link saying, you know, check this out. Because I'm a little bit skeptical of some of the YouTube truthers, yeah?
Yeah.
And apparently it's a recent interview with PK, and he's telling the same old stories about how he was arrested because of the Burke Street attack. But he added in a new thing that I hadn't heard before, which was that his son was there when the guy was doing the doughies. And it's like, well, what are the odds of that?
Well, why didn't he say that at the start?
Good question.
He's an interesting guy, isn't he? I used to follow him a little bit.
What are your thoughts these days?
I haven't looked at his videos for a few months now. So they were recommended to me. So that's the only way I found out about him.
Well, trust me, I wouldn't have listened to this interview. Apparently this is a recent one. I wouldn't listen to it, but someone sent it to me and intimated that I would find it amusing, but it's painful to listen to. But hey, I should say it's the 17th of August, 2017, audio chat on fakeologist.com. Got with me Silver Beam from, you're from Victoria, aren't you, yeah?
That's right.
Yeah, Victoria, our second most populous state here in beautiful Australia. Hey, I wanted to run something past you, right? Even though we're on the other side of the world, whatever shape the world is, we're getting all this nonsense about the Charlottesville event. What's your take on this event?
Well, I haven't looked at it a lot. What I saw on TV tonight on the ABC was a mass gathering with candles and the usual emotional outpouring. So in the end, the effect is the same, but that collision looks really real. Maybe it's stunt people, possibly, but those people are flying through the air, man. That's not – maybe it's CGI, maybe, but it looks really real. I agree with that.
So for the context for maybe archive listeners, who knows, maybe someone listened to this in the future, there was this event in Charlottesville, Virginia, where supposedly a whole bunch of white nationalists supposedly were having a get-together, Unite the Right, and there were some counter-protesters, and someone drove a car over the counter-protesters. Well, not really over them, through them. Killed one,
well,
injured 19.
Not funny. It's not funny if it's real. It's terrible.
Well, if it's real, it's sad for the people who were injured, yeah?
Yeah. But it's pretty bad.
But the whole story, though, the whole narrative of all of this, I'm never going to get to know how much of this is true. You know what I mean?
No, that's right.
Like you think about how confident so many people are that Donald Trump is, he's this or he's that, or he's just a puppet, or he's just an actor, or he's controlled by the Zionists. Man, the reality is I got no idea who this guy is. Like, that's the reality of the matter. And I'm never going to know.
The way I see it is I don't need a point of view until I need a point of view.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I don't need one until I need one. And I don't need to have one unless I'm pushed to it. Knowledge is the relationship between facts. It's not the facts themselves. You can't point to it and say, that's what I know. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm starting to question this whole notion of objective truth. You know what I mean? Like, this whole idea that there is this objective truth which we can all subjectively get access to. I've had doubts about it for a long time, but lately I've been studying it more in a more focused fashion for some content that I've got coming. And I've been thinking about it a lot. And yeah, over the last few weeks especially, starting to really wonder about this idea that there is such thing as an objective truth. But I don't want to get too existential with you just yet. The point I was making about Trump and all the rest of it is, these are just TV shows, man. Like, I live in Brisbane, you live in Victoria. Yep. We were nowhere near this event, right? All we've got is pixels on a screen.
And they're very high-quality pixels this time, I noticed. Most of the very fake-looking events are in shockingly bad quality footage. This one was crystal clear.
Yep, I agree. And not just the main footage that I used for my video, but also there was another video from maybe 50 meters back, I don't know, maybe 150, 200 feet sort of back up the street where they watched the car reverse through. And that was also terrifically clear footage. Nothing like what we receive for all the other major events, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see that further away footage. I only looked at it briefly, and I don't keep up with the news a lot, but I did take a look mainly because it came up on your channel. You know, the numbers as well is another thing. I think you pointed out five or six numbers that were, you know, those type of numbers, those occultic type of numbers.
Well, you know what I did in that first video? I called it Charlottesville event probably real, and I put the real in capital letters. So I was still going for the sensationalized headline. Yeah. But by putting probably, it was like I kind of feel like I was That'd be a head spin for people on either side of the dialectic. The people are like, no, this is definitely fake. Well, I'm saying that it's probably real, so they're not going to like that. And the people who were saying, no, this is definitely real, they will think I'm kind of on their side, but I'm saying probably, which is opening up this notion that it's okay to doubt, like it's okay to have.
maybe that ran through their heads, or maybe like me, they just knew they had to click on it before they would actually know.
Yeah, that's the thing. You never know what effect it has. But that one got up to like it's up to like 6,000 or 7,000 views, and then I've made three more since then. So I've made a few videos on the event, but none of them about whether or not it's real or fake. Like ultimately, because the footage does look real to me. You know what I mean? And you've said it looks real to you.
Well, I've watched a lot of those you know, worst moments on camera footage and stuff like that, and it just has the ring of truth to it when I look at it. You know, it could be CGI. They have that ability.
Yep, 100%. They could be fake. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, just because it looks real, because all the others look so fake, it's obviously fake, right? Whereas this one looks real. Now, just because it looks real doesn't mean that it is real, but it is a contrast to the Boston bombings, for instance. You look at the smoke bombs, it's just a smoke plume. It's silly. It's embarrassing. You know what I mean?
Well, all of the glass was blown out of the shop window. It was blown to the outside. The blast didn't go into the shop window as if the blast was from the street, as they say. All the glass was blown onto the sidewalk. So the bomb was inside the shop.
Yeah, and then you've got like Jeff Bowman, you know, still conscious despite missing
both
legs.
Yeah, just madness. That was the thing that really nailed it for me, that they were faking terrorism when I saw the Boston bombing. That was what really...
Well, it was a huge step for me, the Boston bombing one. Yeah. And you look at that event and similar ones, it's so obvious. It's almost like they're trying to smack you in the face with a fish. It's like, come on, guys, we're being silly here. Whereas Charleston one, or Charlottesville, the footage looks real this time. So they could still be faking it. But for some reason, if that's the case, they've decided to up the production values for reasons I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know why they would do that. I'm almost, you know... I mean, it's just going to disappear down the memory hole like everything else anyway. It is interesting for that fact that it looks so real. I think it could be real, could be fake. I don't know what to say beyond that.
Yeah, I'm with you. Well, with the numbers, what I did in that probably real video was I just pointed out the 119, the one dead 19-inched. So there's your 119.
Yeah.
And there's a specific focus in the footage of one of the buildings on that street where this event occurred on number 117. And 117 or 711, either, no, how do I put this? You can put those digits either way, 711 or 117. They come up time after time after time. So I just at the end did a cheeky little, well, I can see why some people might think it might be fake because there is the 117 and the 119. But look, they're not in and of themselves proof of anything. You get what I'm trying to say? Like they're just.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it could be a genuine false flag.
Yeah. I don't know. Would they actually, risk injuring real people though?
I'm sure they've injured a lot of real people in the past. Yeah. Well, I guess they've killed people, haven't they?
Have they?
Well, I assume they have.
Yeah, I used to, but not anymore. Like, I'm open-minded to it. I'm 100% open-minded to whoever runs the show. I don't think they care about you or me, right? But just from a pragmatic perspective, you know, why would you, if they could fake it, and we both agree they could fake the whole thing, why would they go down the path of, you know, paying some dude to just drive a car down a street? It's like, you might kill a few, you might injure a few.
I had one idea, John. I thought, imagine if they did this to us, right? Imagine if from that moment, that Charleston thing, this is just a hypothetical idea. Imagine if they, from that moment, decided to do all their events real. People would die, bombs would go off, blood, guts, everything. And we would all be left with this huge amass knowledge of fakery that didn't mean anything anymore. That'd be funny, wouldn't it?
That'd be a pretty cool head spin, actually, wouldn't it? Like, yeah. They get us all in the habit of just assuming it's all fake.
Yeah, and then
they flick the switch.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they've got all of these, you know, conspiracy truthers or whatever who are just assuming it's fake. It's like, it's in the news, it must be fake, so we're not even going to consider the possibility that it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past them. But at the same time, I just think pragmatically, like, you tell me you want to fake a white nationalist running over happy, peaceful lefties, right? You tell me you want me to fake that, and I just get in the fakery experts. You know, I don't pay some schmuck to drive a car down the street. But hey, let's move on to the esoteric topics then. Have you looked at what Terran Downvale or National Park Zone have been talking about?
No, I don't. I haven't heard of either of those.
All right, get this. So the reason why Unite the Right were having their big protest, their big rally in this city, was because there's a statue there, a monument to General Lee. I think his name was it Richard Lee? Whatever his name was General Lee, and he was from the Confederate Army in the Civil War in America, yeah?
Okay.
There's a monument for him in a place that used to be called Lee Park, but it's now called Emancipation Park because they recently changed the name, and they're going to take away the monument. So the Unite the Right group were supposedly getting together at this park in this town because it's like, hey, we want to stand up for the Confederate rights and for you see. Here's the thing. If you watch the TV show Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, I know. That's the first thing I thought of, the General Lee car.
Exactly. The General Lee car has a...
I grew up in the 80s. I wasn't allowed to watch that show because it was American and my mum was British, but I still knew about it.
Oh, really? She didn't let you watch American shows?
She let us watch the occasional show, but she didn't like American shows, so we generally avoid them. We watched a lot of British stuff.
You were probably better off that way, man.
We got Monty Python and other things that other kids didn't get.
Yeah, and you would have been brought up, I guess, watching shows generally without a laughter track, whereas the Americans, you know, they pioneered this idea of the audience is so fucking dumb or the comedy is so poor, we've got to tell them when to laugh.
Yeah, like that, yeah.
I remember when someone first
Married with Children. I'm just bringing it up in case anyone remembers it. It was an awful American show.
Well, I mean, I remember when someone first brought up to me the whole point of laughter track and like made me really think about it. This is going back years and years, way before I started looking at all this media fakery stuff. It's like, holy shit, you're right. Like, if I need to be told when to laugh, there's something very, very wrong here.
Yeah, well, to start with, it mustn't be that funny.
No, it mustn't be. And or the audience must be dumb. But it's like, wait, so we're going to laugh along because fake laughter has been put into the very show that we're meant to be laughing with? Like, there's just something fundamentally fucked up about that. Yeah. So if your mum didn't have the American TV shows going on, you're probably better off because you weren't being trained like a seal to laugh like a Pavlovian conditioned dog when they put the laughter track on.
Yeah. And we didn't watch all the horror shows and all the, Rambos and Schwarzenegger movies and stuff. We didn't watch that sort of thing.
No, you missed out in that case, man. I remember watching Terminator 2 when I was,
Terminator 2 because I was older then.
Well, I was only like 7, I think, when it came. What was it, 94? 93, 94?
Yeah, 93.
And, my parents, you know, my parents are like most outer suburban parents, I guess. They probably let us watch, they let me watch anyway, films that maybe I wasn't quite old enough to be watching.
Yeah.
So I'm only laughing because it's like, what can you do? You can't change the past, yeah?
No.
That scene with Sarah Connor, you've seen Terminator 2, that's what we're about. The scene where she's imagining the future and she's inscribing.
Yeah, the nuclear.
Yeah, exactly. She's inscribing on the, so she's out in like the middle of the desert, the American desert, I guess near the Mexican border or something. And she's at a big open area near a park and she's on a bench and she's inscribing on the bench, no fate, because she's thinking about this idea of changing the future.
Yeah.
And then she looks up and in the park, what does she see? But all these children having fun, you know, playing with their mothers. In fact, it looks like it might be her playing with her child almost. And then out of nowhere, this big flash of light, you know, a high-pitched sound in the background. So it's what turns out to be a bomb. Everybody's bodies are turning into, like, into mush. Her skeleton is still holding onto the fence.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
This shit was being beamed. Oh, and she's screaming, of course, and like the way that they've done the videography. And I haven't seen this movie for years and years now, but I remember it so well. The way they've done the videography, it all goes like to a red-white sort of filter, I guess. So it's like hell, basically. Basically, the beautiful park has been turned into hell. I saw that when I was like 6 or 7 years old, man. 6 or 7 years old, I saw that. And you might say, oh, your parents shouldn't let you watch it. I'm telling you. Back when I was that age, lots of children watching movies I shouldn't have watched. But forget about what happened 20 years ago. What do you think children are watching now? They've got iPads. They can watch whatever the hell they want.
Well, they've got access to even the most evil porn on their phone.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, so who's doing anything about that?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, messed up. But I don't want to go too far down that path. So you thought straight away of General Lee. So can you tell me what make and model car General Lee drove?
I could Google it, but I know what it looks like for sure.
It was a Dodge Charger.
Okay, right? Dodge Charger. And you jumped in the window. You didn't open the door.
Exactly, because the doors were welded shut because it was meant to be like a race car, yeah?
Yeah, and the door was very hot.
Yep, that's true. So in the show Dukes of Hazzard, which was a very popular show at the time, millions of viewers every week, they had a car was the centerpiece of their show, this fast muscle car. On the roof was a Confederate flag, and it was named General Lee after a Confederate leader. It was called Dukes of Hazzard, and the car was a Dodge Charger. Now, do you want to guess what make and model the car that was driven down that street and killed one, injured 19 allegedly? Do you want to guess the make and model for me?
A Dodge Charger.
A Dodge Charger, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's all just a setup.
Dodge Charger.
Whether it's real or not. Too many red flags, isn't it?
Well, there's something going on here, right? Now, it gets even better. If you think of the word Duke, other than Dukes of Hazzard, what kind of things do you think?
Duke, well, you think of a type of royalty.
Yeah, well, if you grew up watching British TV, you're probably more likely to do that. What if you're thinking related to, say, white nationalism?
Oh, David Duke.
David Duke!
Who appeared on my television screen the other day.
Oh, I bet that he did, yes. Yeah. So what are the odds of that?
No, sorry, it was on the internet. I saw him. Yeah, he was talking about, Donald Trump and all that stuff.
Of course.
Yeah.
And he's been very prominent in the media for a long time now, but especially to do with this event, David Duke coming out. In fact, he's even come out and said that this, you know, to do with Donald Trump. Like Donald Trump, how do I articulate this? David Duke has been publicly saying things about how it's time for Donald Trump to do what the white nationalists put him in office to do, if you can get what I'm trying to say. Like he's been playing up the mainstream sort of bad guy, if you like.
Yeah, he has, yeah.
Duke. And of course he's
Well, I remember when he became I remember when he became conspiracy mainstreamed on the Rents site, when Rents, gave in and started, talking about, Zionism and those types of subjects, and David Duke and I think, that Brother Nathaniel character became very popular.
Oh yeah, Brother Nathaniel. Is he still doing his thing?
I don't know. I don't look at Rents anymore. I did. Oh, okay. I did maybe a year ago last time.
Yeah, I remember Brother Nathaniel. He was one of those channels I got into like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And he's got a pretty funny shtick, hasn't he? Hey, well, I can't do his accent.
Yeah, he's had his own history in the church, which kind of shows that he's probably not genuine. He's switched sides from different factions to different factions, depending on what was sort of convenient.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident he's not genuine. I'm pretty confident that guy's not genuine. But you know, when you first get into this, you don't know who's genuine, who's not, and all that information, you know, about the synagogue of Satan, all of that kind of new stuff. When it's all new, it's kind of let it wash over you. So yeah, I don't even know if he's still doing his thing.
Yeah, I think he is. I think he is.
Yeah, what a surprise.
Let's have a look. I'm going to have a quick look.
Yeah, you do that. Well, while you're doing that, I'll just see if I can refresh my memory. Yeah, so you've got the Dukes of Hazzard. Oh, yeah, and then what had happened was like a week before this event in Charlottesville, there was a Dukes of Hazzard like get-together, like for all fans from all around the world and all around America to get together, not far from Charlottesville, like 50 miles away or something. I forget the name of the town. Like, what are the odds of that? And then,
well, first thing on Rents' side is David Duke.
There you go.
Exclusive talk with David right after Charlottesville.
There you go.
And then a picture of Mr. Trump. And a picture of Kim.
even something as simple as that. Yeah, well, it might as well be. But, I mean, even something as simple as that. Dukes of Hazzard, Confederate flag, General Lee, that was, you know, that's the park where this was meant to be all about. General Lee. General Lee was the name of the car in Dukes of Hazzard.
Yep.
Dodge Charger. I mean, if this is not a setup, then this is what they would call a synchronicity, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's a big one.
Huge one.
Yeah.
Like if it's not human beings sitting around in a room spitballing ideas, and it's not another intelligent force, and we just leave that there for now, if it's not sort of humans or their computers, then it's the universe, isn't it? Like something's taken the piss out of us is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, maybe not taking the piss. Maybe it's more like we're in a type of mass psychotic episode where we're perceiving in the real world things that can't really be real, but we have to accept them as real because we're in a state of psychosis. And maybe that's even being taken advantage of. But I think it's like the world is, maybe not all of us, because we can talk about it objectively and just discuss it, but a lot of people are just swept along, you know. It means nothing to them. So there's this kind of layer where you look at it and you think, well, I know there's something beyond this that's behind it, you know. What is it, though? I don't know. Maybe the universe is forced into these things in a way.
When you say psychosis, what do you mean by that?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure what I mean. It's just a word I use. I guess I mean where you are no longer believing in the real world, then anything could be real, you know, and most people are not living in the real world. So maybe reality throws up illusions. Well, it's like in the Bible, it says something about a strong delusion being allowed to come over mankind as a kind of test to see whether people love truth or not. And those who didn't love truth were taken by the deception, and those who did love truth escape it somehow.
Well, that makes a good segue. What's your general opinion on the Bible? Like, what's your general take on it?
Well, I believe in the Bible. It's holy scripture to me.
I'm going to look up John 1:17, Revelation 1:17, and Genesis 1:17. We're getting into this habit whenever I find numbers, just looking them up to see what comes up. John 1:17, that doesn't really seem interesting. Revelation 1:17, when I saw him, When I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead. Then he placed his right hand on me and said, do not be afraid. I am the first and the last. Genesis 1:17, what does that say? God set them in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth. I still can't get over Revelations 9:11. You know what I mean? Revelations 9:11, Abaddon. That was the one that got me thinking, you know what? I know that there might be some wisdom in the Bible. Not that I personally think it comes from God or anything like that, but it's this text that is clearly important. It got here somehow. You know what I mean? So I've always felt it was worth paying more attention to eventually. Then when I saw Revelations 9:11, that's what really got me thinking, you know what? Time to start paying some attention now. Revelation 9:11, and they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon, as in Apollo.
Yeah.
As in Apollo was the king above them, as in we choose to go to the moon. You know what I mean? What are the odds of that?
I'm sure I'm following you.
All right, then. So why do you think they called? So according to modern mythos, you speak to the average person about what was happening. Okay, they don't really know what was happening in the 60s and 70s. People these days have no memories. But if you could put pictures on there to give them a reminder and say, see this thing? What is this? They'd say, oh, that's the rocket that took man to the moon. Yeah?
Yeah.
Most people seem to believe that man has walked on the moon, that this is possible and it's been done. And it was the Apollo missions. So this is a huge part of modern mythos.
Yeah.
Where did the name Apollo come from for this mission?
I'm not sure.
I looked it up. Officially, it was just a random thing. Oh, well, we had to think of something to give these space missions. And some guy was just reading a book about Greek mythology and he spitballed that idea and we liked it. So we called him Gemini and Apollo. And it's like, give me a break, man. What a joke. There's no way that happened just by accident. This name has some sort of meaning and it seems to be part of modern mythos, Apollo. And, of course, it ties straight into what we're told is ancient mythos, ancient Greek mythos, yeah?
Yeah.
And then I find out that Revelation, which is what, the last book of the Christian Bible or of the New Testament Bible? I'm not sure. I have to double check that. But certainly it's towards the end and it says it there, Revelation. They're telling you, right? 9:11, and we all know why 9:11 is important. They're saying that they had a god above them who was Apollo.
Yeah, okay, I see what you mean now. Yeah, why wouldn't they do that?
Yeah, exactly, why wouldn't they? Well, then again, is it the universe?
They didn't come up with these numbers. You know, they steal everything. They don't get these numbers from their own, you know, wisdom. Like the number 33, that's the year Christ died. He was 33 years old. They just used that number. It doesn't mean it's inserted in the Bible by the occultists. You know what I mean? It's just, they just rob it. They just take it and they just claim that they are the, you know, they want you to think they're the ones who create everything.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're like, you're working from the basis that the Bible was here before the people who run the show or that like they, I see.
Well, not necessarily. No, I'm not necessarily. They could well have been here since the beginning. I'm not saying they haven't been active, but they have never been so powerful, ever. But, well, maybe I can't say never, but as far as we can tell, in the past they weren't as powerful. There were other powers that opposed them and were successful against them.
See, I come at it from the angle of I don't know how the Bible got here or from whom. I don't know how the people who run the show got here or from whom or when. Like, my knowledge now is significantly lower than it was 3 years ago. Like, I know less things now, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I don't even need to know. Like, if I look at prior to this chat that we're having right now, if I look at how I spent my day, none of it needed any explanation as to how, who, when, where, what, anything. You know what I mean? None of it. And that's the case for most people's days.
Yeah.
We don't really need to know that much, but we've been raised to believe we can and we should know so much, you know, memorize what's in the textbook and you can know how we all got here 6 billion years ago. Or alternatively, memorize this book and you can know that we all got here in a flood 6,000 years ago, whatever the case might be. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
When it's like the truth is you and I will never know in the true sense of the word know how we got here.
Well, can you really make that statement, John, and say the truth is that we will never know?
I think I can. I think I can. So long
you can think it, but it doesn't make it real.
No, but like what I'm saying is so long as we think there is such thing as an objective truth, you and I can never access it. The best we'll get is subjective truths, which is one of the things
that's
been leading.
Well, that's pretty hopeless, isn't it?
Well, is it though?
Well, it is to me personally. Yeah, I think that's pretty boring and hopeless.
Well, yeah, boring.
No,
I think
there's
it is.
There's no ultimate goal to your quest for knowledge. That it's ultimately just all relative, subjective, just personal. You know, just human. I'm tired of human. You know,
what's your ultimate goal though?
My ultimate goal is to discover the ultimate truth.
Like, do you really think you can do that?
Yes, I do.
How would you go about it? Like, what would be the method?
I would investigate the various claims to ultimate truth to start.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Well, I mean, if you find the ultimate truth, man, please do what you can to share it with me, but I do not expect to find the ultimate truth. In fact, it's like a tunnel. Like, it's like
why
a tunnel where it seems like the...
That's why it takes faith to think that there is something so far beyond that it's beyond even beyond. You know what I mean? It's you'll never even reach it because it's infinitely beyond you. You can journey towards it forever, and it's worth it doing that.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it's not worth it doing that.
Well, if you don't expect it, why would it happen? Aren't you lowering your expectations?
I'm not expecting the rain on any particular day, but it can still rain. You know what I mean? I don't need to expect something for it to happen, do I?
Well, I don't suppose you do, no.
I mean, if someone has faith, and I've said this for a long time, if someone has faith and that faith gives them enrichment in their life, I don't see a problem with that at all. And I definitely don't think it's my job, even if I don't share that faith, to try and take it away from them.
Sure.
And I've met in my life several religious people, Christians, who seemed quite content with their lives, certainly more so than me or any of the atheists that I knew. Do you know what I mean? And I don't think that's a coincidence.
No. No, even if it's psychosomatic, it's going to be helpful. I mean, you know, I don't know. There's definitely a different quality in life to a person who believes in God and a person who doesn't. There's no doubt about that.
Yep, I agree with that. And also just purpose. Like, if you, whether you call it faith or something different, if you have this conception of your life as a journey or as a mission or as an adventure, if you have it that this is all part of a grander plan and that gives you strength, you're probably going to achieve more and enjoy more of what you do, the goods and the bads, the ups and the downs, than someone who truly thinks that this is all genuinely meaningless and has nothing.
Well, I just think it's foolish to think that it's meaningless. I just think that's foolish to me.
I agree.
It's not that it's disappointing or that it's, although it is, I mean, it would be if it were meaningless. I mean, I would just kill myself. I wouldn't, maybe I wouldn't kill myself, but I'd go and have some fun and then maybe I'd kill myself. You know what I mean? I don't know what I'd do. I'd probably become a criminal of some kind.
The nihilism that is taught, and it's not taught. People don't take nihilism classes at school, and the TV shows they watch aren't called nihilism, but that is what it is. It's being programmed. It's just not called that.
Well, what happens, John? What happens is the virtues are destroyed in children. That's what happens. The virtues are destroyed, and the vices are implanted through television. Because on television, you don't see people making peace. You don't see people hanging out together, enjoying each other's company in a nice way. You see people fighting and killing and arguing and taking revenge and spiting each other and, you know, and that gets implanted in the child. So they're cut off from anything good from a very early age. Not anything, that's not possible, but, you know, they're pretty weakened towards nihilism and atheism because they've been implanted with evil.
I agree with all of that. And also when you're teaching them that everything came from nothing 6 billion years ago or whatever, just all... Like everything that you see around you is a complete matter of chance and meaningless chance as well. What does that do to a young human? You know what I mean? In contrast with a human who's told, no, there's a purpose for all of this. We might not know what the purpose is. We might never know what the purpose is, but there's a grander plan going on here. You contrast those two mindsets. They're going to have very big difference down the line. I mean, I knew a guy here in Brisbane, a very intelligent person and successful by many standards. And he's like, I don't know, he might be 50 now or something. He genuinely will sit there and try and tell you, and he's done this with me before, he will try and tell you that determinism, like everything has already been predetermined. You have no free will. He'll try and tell you that. And he feels very smug. He feels very smug because a lot of people he speaks to have never studied philosophy, and have never really considered this idea of free will and what have you. And he'll be able to, I guess, beat them with rhetoric in his things. And he feels really smug doing that. Like, oh, no, there's no free will. How can you have a choice in the matter and blah, blah, blah. And there's these neuropsychological studies. And it's like he really feels smug convincing other people that he doesn't even have a say in his own life. How fucked up is that?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you right now, that guy's not happy. I'll tell you right now. I'll tell you right now, straight up. And I don't think that's a coincidence.
No, because it's denying the very humanity having a free will, you know. Like, I mean, that's even just a human thing. Apart from being something that's a gift that's divinely given, it's just, I mean, even if you're just a humanist, at least have free will, for goodness sake. You know what I mean? How can they, but they put themselves in that position because they're materialists. So they have no choice. At least they're honest and they go take it to the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. At least he's being logically consistent with that. But I put him on the spot.
Yeah, I do have some admiration for atheists and determinists and such because at least they're not indifferent. You know what I mean?
If they're consistent, though, whereas with this particular gentleman, and he's just one example, but I think it does speak to a certain mindset that these people have.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
So I hit him up with morality. I'm like, okay, then if we're all just the products of atoms and yada, 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 it's like, how do you justify morality though? You know, and I got him to try and go down this path of, cause he would still try and tell you that some things are right and some things are wrong, yada, yada. And he went down basically like the practical ethics. Well, you know, if it's wrong for me to try and kill you because if we all tried to kill each other, we'd all be worse off, yada, yada. And it's like, yeah, if everyone else tried to kill, but if you just did it on the sly, that wouldn't stuff up society and it'd make your life
better.
That
could give you a huge advantage, evolution.
Exactly. And of course, he had no real answers to this because he'd never really been challenged properly. You know, and there's a lot of people out there that, like intellectual frauds who they can win lots of arguments, you know, seemingly, because most of the people they come up against can't think. That's not what school was there for. You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, the average person cannot think. Let's be straight up. They can't do it.
Well, they haven't practiced. They can, but they're very bad at it. They just haven't practiced it. Everyone can think a little bit.
Sure, but that's like saying that everyone can play the piano. They just haven't practiced.
Well,
it's like,
anyone can hit the keys. Anyone can hit the keys. Give them a few minutes. They might find a little bit of a tune if they have some talent. But maybe some people aren't talented at thinking and they need us to think for them. And that's what we're meant to be doing. But we're in this situation where we're not able to play that role.
Well, I mean, would you want to play the role of thinking for other people?
If they needed me to, yeah.
Really?
Why not? If I'm good at thinking, what do you mean by thinking? What, telling them how to think? Is that what you mean?
Not so much telling them how to think. I think if you've studied.
What about asking them the right questions? What about just getting them to ask the right questions? How's that for a start?
Well, I mean, I guess what we're talking about is like trying to lead people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think. I think there's certain places, like times and places where I'd be happy to do that, you know, on a football field or a cricket field. If I was the best leader in the team, I'd be happy to be the leader. If I was not the best leader, I'd be happy to follow the instructions of the guy who was. Like there are some places where that's, I'm more than happy to go along with all of that. But in these deeper questions of what the world is and how the world is operated, I think, no, I don't really think I do want to lead other people, to be honest. Maybe
but
if I did
do,
find
but
the...
But you do, John. You help people think. Are you saying you're not helping people think?
You're like that.
You want to do it, but deny that you're doing it. You can't be that tricky.
I like to think that I'm helping people to think, right? I like to think that. But I don't actually even know that's true.
You helped me think, John. You helped me with some very interesting thoughts that I'm really glad I had that were enjoyable thoughts too. And I don't mind you doing that for me, you know?
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. That is a very nice thing of you to say. I appreciate that.
Everybody has their point of view, so it's just sharing points of view. That's what I mean by helping people think. It's like saying, well, have you tried this point of view? Have you tried this point of view? Because all they've got is this consensus point of view. They can't break out of that. That's what's wrong with them. It's a consensus point of view. It's not a lack of thinking or an inability to think. Some of them are brilliant thinkers within that consensus.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to share. Maybe we're discussing different things here. I'm more than happy to share my opinions on these ideas and give my perspective. The idea that, you know, I mean, there are people out there who would love for everyone to agree with them. Do you know what I mean? They'd love that. Yeah. Like whether the person really, really even understood, so long as they're saying that they agree, that's what they really want.
Yeah.
Whereas with me, that almost seems like it'd be a pretty horrible position to be in, wouldn't it?
Yeah, if you had people. Yeah, I understand what you mean. Yeah. John, I have to ask you about chemtrails.
Oh yeah, that's right, because of our friends
have you looked up at the sky and seen these trails, John?
I haven't seen them with my own eyes, but I have seen Zell's photos. Now, Zell, I mean, you know, jokes aside, he seems like he means well, and I'm happy to take his photos on face value. Those are not photos of clouds. Those are clearly man-made, what would you call them, clouds or trails, right? They're clearly man-made. It's almost certain. And I'm happy to take Zell's photos on face value. So I'm in full agreement. If he says to me, I've got these photos, and these photos to me lead me to the conclusion that humans, for whatever reason, are creating fake clouds. I'm like, if I were you, if I saw those with my own eyes, that would be my inference as well. But I haven't seen it with my own eyes, which I think that's his problem with me, is like, because I haven't seen them here in Brisbane or in Melbourne, that somehow that's a problem. And it's like, I'm just telling you the straight up truth. I haven't seen it with my own eyes.
Okay. Well, I hope that clears it up for everybody.
Have you seen them down there in Victoria?
Oh yeah, I've seen them for years and years, a lot. Yeah, I used to take a lot of photos of them. I have a whole bunch of photos. I even created some web pages with a friend years and years ago and put them online when we photographed the first few ones we were doing. But yeah, they definitely come out of planes, and they're some kind of cloudy stuff, you know. What I've noticed about them that's interesting is that they often take on a kind of helical, I think you say it, shape, where there's like a braided twin strands that are braided or kind of twisted around each other. And they often resemble the photos that NASA presents to us of filamentary structures between galaxies, or shooting out of nebula and, you know, these kind of arms that come out of galaxies and stuff. There's also another type of a chemtrail type phenomena, which is where the clouds kind of bubble and crater in this funny way, and they get an iridescent sheen on them, which is multicolored sheen. And that looks very similar to a lot of the, again, to the nebula photos and the space stellar objects that NASA presents to us. Yeah, it's interesting.
So what do you think is going on here?
Well, people say it has something to do with electrifying the layers of the atmosphere, certain layers. I think people have talked about the ionosphere having something to do with it. Maybe, I'm not sure on that. But because I have a bit of knowledge of the electric universe, their interpretation of these NASA photographs is that there are electric currents flowing through space, and that they power the suns and the galaxies, and these electric currents flow in these filamentary shapes. And when I saw the similarity in shape, I thought, well, possibly there is an electrical nature to these chemtrail clouds. That was kind of before so much doubt was cast on those NASA images. So I'm not sure where to take it from there, but I've just noticed the patterns.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, like I said, I haven't seen these chemtrails, but I'm completely open-minded to them. Why wouldn't they? If they thought there was something to gain from doing it, why wouldn't they do it? But I don't know what they stand to gain from doing it. You know, I don't.
Yeah, nobody really understands it. It's almost impossible to get any decent information, because you can't confirm any of it, you know. I mean, I've looked into getting samples taken and tested, but it's a really difficult process, so I gave up on it. I was going to get the water tested for aluminium and barium, as other people had done overseas in the States and stuff. I was going to try and do something like that. That's still a possibility, to see if the levels are normal or if they're raised. Another guy in the US claimed to have found a correlation between visual visibility across through to the horizon and the rate of death, the death rate in the area. And that where there was lower visibility, there was a higher death rate. I've never confirmed that, but that was interesting.
How important would you put it? Like, if you were talking to someone who was not familiar with any alternative theories at all, but they were open-minded, they were genuinely open-minded, they weren't going to tear you down, and they were starting from square one, and they'd said to you, look, I want to know what you know, and if that is good or bad for me, that's up to me, but I just want you to tell me, what are the most important topics you've looked at? Where would chemtrails rank in that for you, in that list? If they said to you, give me a list.
I wouldn't have a clue, man. I'm sorry. That's a hard question. Well, chemtrails are good in one way, because if there's one in front of you and you're with an open person, you can just point to it and say, do you see that? what is that? How do you explain that? You know, why doesn't the television talk about that? You know, you can point it out to them. So it's a powerful thing, the chemtrail phenomenon. That's one of the ways that I even got into this scene in the 90s, because people were talking about it then and saying, look, what's going on with these trails? And, you know, and that was one of my early things that got me into this scene. So it was important to me in that way. I don't know where to rank it though, man. That's a really weird question.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, it is a tough question. For me, if, like, with that same hypothetical, I'm starting afresh, you know what I mean? Suppose I could go back and talk to the 10-year younger version of me, you know what I mean? Who was pretty much starting fresh with all of this.
Yeah.
I'd probably start with, like, who we are, where we are, when we are, you know what I mean? So for instance, I'd start off with, you've been told that all of the other human beings are more or less the same as you. More or less, you're all the same species. You're all a Homo sapien, yeah? Yeah, because that's what I was told. All right, sweet. Now, let's go through the evidence that you have that that is the case and just work from there, because the reality is we've got no evidence at all that that's the case. This idea that just because we can all breed with one another, that we're all the same, that that makes us the same species. Okay, then what the hell is a species then? Because if you look at Darwin's finches, which he supposedly used to prove natural selection and the shape of the beak and this kind of crap, they look practically the same. They look like the same bird. If no one told you they were different birds, you wouldn't even know they were different birds. You just think they were different sizes, the same bird.
Well, no, natural selection does happen, John. Natural selection, evolution doesn't happen one creature into another, but natural selection does happen.
Really?
Creatures are, oh yeah. No, it does. Like, I'll give you an example. There's a kind of fish that lives in certain streams and they have spots on them, right? Now, the fish with really bright and colorful spots are more attractive to mates, but they're also more attractive to predators to being eaten.
Right? Do you know the name of these fish?
No, I'm sorry, I don't. It's just an example I remember. So in streams with a lot of...
example of something that actually happens or just a hypothetical?
It's a scientific study that I read about. Like,
so it is meant to be real though. So there should be... like, if I look for these fish...
These are real creatures that they studied. So what they did was they put them in a predator-rich pond, and they found that the number of fish with very bright spots or whatever went down, and their spots became smaller. And because the genes were there for small spots or big spots, that the ones with big spots died out quicker and didn't reproduce as much because they were being eaten by the predators because they were more visible, right? So all the information is there in the fish for a bright spot or a dull spot or whatever kind of spot, and there's all different types of fish. But depending on the situation, different genes will thrive. Different, you know, variations on the colors or forms of the creature will thrive. It's like creatures that have lost their eyesight that live in caves and have dead eyes. They have eyes, but they don't work anymore because they don't need to.
I'm glad you brought this up. There's a few things in there that we need to unpack. So you could take a whole species or group of animals and put them in a pond or whatever artificial setup that you like. I'm not really sure. And then find that in this artificial setup that something happens to the fish. I'm not really sure how that proves natural selection as it's understood, you know, from Darwin. This idea that over many, many, many generations.
No, wait. Look.
You'll get change. Because when I say natural selection,
just let me clarify something. I'm not talking about the origin of features in animals. I'm not talking about the origin of colors or the origin of patterns or the origin of limbs and things like that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about variations within the expression of those characteristics. There are variations, man. There are different kinds of dogs. They're all dogs, but they're different kinds of dogs. Now, there was once just a dog, man, and there was nothing but a dog. And then it variated. Well, there must have been. And you can even look back over. Well,
I've looked into breeds, okay?
Fair enough. I don't know that's true, but I believe that's true.
Bro, I heard the story that all breeds of dog all derive from the wolf, yeah?
Yeah, I've heard that
too. This is a story that a lot of people believe. So you know what I did? I went to try and find back how far back the documented evidence goes for these breeds being bred. It only goes back a couple of hundred years, and it goes right back to the breeds that we have today existing back then.
Okay.
Right?
So no new breeds have been created. Are you saying no new breeds have been created since people were crossbreeding animals? Are you saying that?
Well, no, I'm saying that if you look at the evidence to prove that all of these breeds come from a wolf, there isn't any.
Yeah, okay. You can't go back and prove that they all came from, that's true. I agree.
And yet, that's what we all believe.
You also can't deny, John, that if you crossbreed certain types of dogs, you can end up with a different, completely different looking dog, right? Who cares what you call it or whether it's a species or whatever you want to classify it as. It looks different, man. It's got a different shape. It's got different colors. It does, it's suited to something different. That's why you get, you know, that's why wolves have white fur when they're in the snow, man, because the ones with dark fur don't last because they're too easy to, well, I'm not exactly sure why, but they don't adapt to that environment and develop that color. You see what I'm saying?
I agree with you. You can crossbreed breeds of dogs. You could take, for instance, a chihuahua and a poodle and come up with a mix between the two, yeah?
Yeah.
But that isn't natural selection. That's humans crossbreeding the animals. And when we think of natural selection, like, the Darwinian natural selection, we think of this notion that over many, many generations, the species like self-selects for its ideal characteristics. We think of change over time. So even if you took a bunch of fish and found that the colorful ones were attacked more by the predators, great. That doesn't prove anything about change over time.
It proves that there can be variations within the expression of characteristics in animals depending on the environment they're in, John. And that happens over the course of time. It doesn't happen instantly. It hasn't always been fixed like that. It has to change, doesn't it? So there is change over time in the expression of animals' forms and colors and functions. There is.
Where's the proof of this change, though?
Well, because when you get those fish and you put them in a predator-rich environment, then you end up with a lot of dull-colored fish. And if you put them in an environment with lots of mates, you end up with a lot of bright-colored fish. That's how you know. And if you put them in a mixed environment with some predators and some mates, you'll get a more diverse mixture.
Sure, but let's just look through what you're saying here. You're saying that if you put a whole bunch of fish in an artificially constructed tank and predators
go for it.
Well,
I'm not talking about an artificial environment. I'm talking about moving them from one pond to another pond.
Sure, but that's
not
still
artificial. That's a natural environment.
It is. It's not natural if it needs human intervention. But regardless of how these
creatures get to demonstrate it happening.
But it's no longer natural, which seems like a pretty important premise to all of this.
Well, it is natural to an extent because it is the function of nature. What has to be natural? Is a Coke can natural? It's an extension of nature. It's maybe just as natural as a tree for all you know.
All right, well, I guess then we'd have to sort of work out what this word natural means. But even if we say, right, the fish ends up in this other area, this other pond, and the predators attack one certain type, so we're left with more of the other type.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. How does that prove change at whether it's a molecular level or a genetic level, whatever it is that causes creatures to be what they are, how does that prove change over time?
It doesn't prove...
Like a one-off study. I mean, what we've been talking about...
It's not a change... Wait. It's not a change or an addition to the information that is being expressed in the creature. It is a change in the type of information being expressed. There's a range of information that can be expressed by a creature, right? We all have a range. We can have blue eyes. We can have brown eyes. There's a range within us that we can express. Under different environments, different creatures express different ranges of that information that is available to be expressed, depending on what suits the environment. Do you see? And that happens over time. So how is that not change over time or variation in the creature over time?
Well, because you said that there was this example with fish changing, and I'm telling you, while we've been talking, I've looked it up. I've got the study here. Predator preference for brightly colored males in the guppy, a viability cost for sexually selected trait.
Yeah, I'm not saying the creature changes.
But that's the whole point. Natural selection, as people understand it, is this notion that over time, you know, on the Galapagos Islands, this particular bird will grow a longer beak to crack bigger nuts or whatever. Like over time, they naturally select the birds, like the female birds pick the bird who can crack the most nuts, for argument's sake. And over time, this means you've got a whole bunch of birds with bigger nuts. That's how people understand natural selection. And I'm not sure there's any evidence whatsoever that that's the case.
Well, you should look it up.
Well, we've been talking, I have, and I've found this predator preference for brightly colored males in the guppy, a viability cost for sexually selected trait by Godin and McDonough. and it was published back in 2003. And I've read through the abstract, and all they're talking about is what we've discussed here, how if you take a whole bunch of brightly colored fish and you've got predators who target the brightly colored fish, you'll end up with less brightly colored fish. That proves nothing about there being a change at whatever level you call it, molecular, biological, whatever, over time to the point where the species changes. None whatsoever.
It's a change in the expression of the potential. That's what, it's not a change in the fundamental, you know, matter or something. It's not a change from a bird into a dinosaur. You know what I mean? All types of birds are kind of within each bird, and depending on the bird, it's expressed in a different way. It's the same with every human. It's like with personality. Anybody can have any personality, really. You could probably program them various personalities. It doesn't change the fundamental factor of personality. What it is, it's a change in expression. So there are different variations on the theme.
See, like, I've heard people arguing this, that there's, macroevolution is false, but microevolution is real. And I'm saying, what evidence is that microevolution is real?
Yeah, like, I don't use those terms. I don't agree with using those terms, because evolution means one creature changing into another creature, type of creature. That doesn't happen on any scale. There is no microevolution. It's not evolution. It's natural selection. It's just varying expressions of genetic information. That's all it is. The kinds of creatures, the difference between a dog and a cat is never going to change. You can't change that. Because a cat will express cat, dog will express dog. You know what I mean? Macro and microevolution, I don't like those terms.
Sure, but even expression, like even that, I'm not really sure what you mean by that term when you say expression.
Well, if I turn on my computer, the screen can express various files, right? Depending on which one I double click. Okay, all the files are contained within the computer. The potential for any file is contained within the computer, given enough space. The potential is there for all sorts of information to manifest. It just depends on what I choose it to express. Now, in nature, it's the environmental pressure that changes the expression of the different creatures. You know what I mean?
Well, we got onto this because I was talking about Darwin's finches, and because I wasn't really trying to talk about evolution so much. I'm talking about how, if you look at the official science, Darwin found all these different species of bird that look the exact same, and yet we're told that humans are all the same species, even though we look completely different from one locality to another. And then so there's obviously a contradiction here. And then moving beyond that, even
which other creature can talk?
Parrots can talk.
No, they can't. You know what I'm saying? We can all talk. So we're all sentient persons. So where are the persons in the animal world? Where are the persons in the rock or mineral or vegetable world? There aren't any persons. There are only persons, as we know, in the human world. So we're all persons, right? Can we agree on that?
No, because there are mute humans who can't talk. So are you saying that they're not humans?
You know what I'm saying, John. Don't be scared.
No, I don't. I'm asking you a serious question. If you're going to tell me that you define humans by being able to talk, but parrots don't count, okay, how about mute humans?
I don't mean just being able to talk. I mean the ability to be self-aware, all the things that you know what I'm talking about.
Excellent. Self-awareness.
We're different to animals. We're different to animals, aren't we?
We're getting somewhere here. Self-awareness, all right? What is that? Because I know lots of humans who seem completely and utterly deluded. Completely deluded.
Yeah,
they've got no self-awareness.
That's not what I mean by self-awareness, and you know that.
But I don't know what you mean. You're trying to say
Look, does a dog know it's going to die? No. Does a human? Yes. So all the things that know they're going to die and think about it, they're called persons. We're all people, right?
So you don't think cows know they're going to die when they're at the slaughterhouse? You don't think they can smell and just sense what's happening?
They're not thinking about it when they're chewing on the field.
Well, we don't know what they're thinking about, do we?
Okay, maybe we don't, yeah.
And I don't know what most other humans are thinking about.
We're on another level than animals, and we're all one thing.
Well, that's exactly what I'm questioning here. That's the exact thing that I'm questioning. How do we know that we're all the same thing and that we're all on the same level? How do we know that? We've been taught that from a young age. And many of us have built our entire epistemological or moral frameworks on this notion. But that's the notion that I'm questioning here.
All right. Well, I'll put it this way. If there's a person standing by a pier, you know, out on a lake, and another person is drowning in front of them, and the person on the pier rescues them, I'd give that person the value of a person. But if they didn't rescue them, I'd wonder if they were really a person in a way.
There you go. See, and that these are the same kind of things that I wonder about. Like when we look at people's actions, do their actions really reveal that they are the same as, in my case, I look at people and I think, do their actions reveal that they are the same inherent thing as I am? And oftentimes I find myself saying no. Doesn't mean that I am better or worse or they're better or worse, but these are not the same creatures as me. Some of them are clearly incapable of thinking at the most basic level.
Yeah, but that's only one level of human thinking. What about all the other levels of human existence? What about the fact that they can, say, kick a football? If you can relate to their awesome way of kicking a football, there's a little bit of humanity in there. There's a little bit of a rapport.
Sure, and you use the word humanity. This is exactly what I'm getting at. We use the term human to describe all of us, and we were given the term Homo sapien. What is this thing? What is this thing that we assume that we're all part of? What is it to be a human?
I think we are the image of God. So we share qualities of, we share divine qualities with the Creator, such as our freedom and our ability to love and our ability to reason and think. That's what makes us human.
And so if you work off the basis that humans are created in the image of God, then perhaps you have more reason to want to believe that all humans are, have some inherent thing that makes them all the same. Whereas, well, I don't come at it from that angle.
No.
And I'm looking at this. I mean, if you look at the, there's a field of inquiry known as ontology, which is questioning what it is when we say that this thing is the same as another. So, oh, those five things over there are all trees. Okay, what are we really talking about when we say that they're all the same? They're all clearly not touching each other. They're all distinct from one another. They're all different shapes and sizes. What are we saying when we say that they're all trees? What does that mean, and how is it important? And then you start thinking about abstract. They appear the same, and we're saying there's five of them. There's five of them, right? Yeah,
which is five ones.
Which is so five.
There's really still only one, isn't there?
And this is exactly where this field of inquiry goes, is the question, how are things distinct from one another? How do we make these distinctions, et cetera? And somehow, someone at a very young age for all of us convinced us that we can make a distinction and we're all different from all the other animals. And within this group of us, we're all pretty much the same. And I'm saying now, I'm questioning that at a very fundamental level. And not to be nasty to anyone and not to be elitist or anything like that. I'm just saying, guys, can we just talk about this? Like, who the hell convinced us we're all the same? There are humans walking around today who will look up at the moon and honest to God believe that man walked up there. They honest to God believe that. And nothing that you ever say or do or show them will ever change their mind, ever. And yet we're supposed to believe that we're all the same. We're all the exact same. We're all Homo sapien. Thank you, Carl Linnaeus. We're all the same. We're all Homo. We're all capable of thinking. Just the humans who actually believe fairy tales are real. They're just a little bit misguided, but we're all fundamentally the same. What the hell is the same about us?
Well, I know humans who believe fairies are real, and I don't think they're any less human for it. That's ridiculous.
And this comes back to what, this is what comes back to, what is it to be a human? If part of being human is being sentient or being able to think, okay, then the person who believes in fairy tales, are they demonstrating that they can think?
Well, you'd have to ask them some questions, wouldn't you?
And see how they react.
I'm sorry, John, but I'm going to have to go.
No, that's cool, man. I was only meant to be a quick chat.
No, that's all right. Yeah, someone's just turned up and I'm going to have to attend to them.
So, no worries, man. All the best.
Yeah, but it was really good to talk, John. I'm really thankful that I did this. Thank you.
No, I appreciate it, mate. All the best.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you and goodbye. Good night.
Cheers, mate. Fakeologist Radio on August 17, 2017. My 20s quickly coming to an end. Not long left. By the end of this month, I will be 30. What have I learnt in my 20s? What have I learnt from all of this? Very tough question. Don't have any good answers for you, I'm afraid. I've got a lot of questions for you, though. If you'd like a few questions, I've got plenty of those. But answers? Not so many. And I'll be better off believing things, even if they're harder to justify than maybe we think they are. Are we better off believing them? Are we better off having faith? Are we better off accepting certain fundamental principles axiomatically and working from there and questioning the fundamental axioms? There's a Nietzsche quote about staring into the abyss. Let me see if I can find that. So from Beyond Good and Evil, which I haven't read, I'll admit, but I've found what I think is a reputable source for this particular quote. I'm not going to read the German. I'll just read the English translation. This is Friedrich Nietzsche. Born 1844, died 1900, German philosopher. And the quote is, where are we? Quote, "He who fights with monsters should look to it that he himself does not become a monster. And if you gaze long into an abyss, the abyss also gazes into you." Now, what I saw this quote a little while ago, what it means to me or what I take from that is this idea that you can question all you like. You can gaze into the abyss, this absence of answers, all you like. But our friend Mr. Nietzsche is warning that if you do that, be willing for those questions to come back upon you from yourself, and be willing to, or be ready for this idea that there are lots of things about yourself that you won't have questions for either, and that maybe there's more happiness in taking certain things for granted. Maybe. That's the way I read that quote. That's why I like quotes. You know, I don't think look at a quote and go, oh, that's the truth. I look at a quote and I go, hey, what can I take from that? What does that say to me? What does it lead me to question and think about? What is the benefit from all of these questions? And this is what I mean when I say that I don't want to, even if people came to me and said, we want you to think for us, I'd be like, well, that's, you're in big trouble now, buddy boy, because my thinking doesn't necessarily lead to happiness. I can tell you that much for free. So anyway, that was a good chat with Silverbeam though, wasn't it? A few things came up there. I'd never heard of that fish and the dot study, but I looked it up while we were talking. I have to go and look further into that one, download the study and see if I can find some, interesting things to take from it. But yeah, look up Darwin's finches, guys. Look up the photo of Darwin's finches, all these different species of finch, and tell me if you notice anything weird about it. I'll tell you right now, the finches all look the same, but they're different species. Humans all look very different, but we're all the same species. That's what leads me to question concepts like species. That's what leads me to question things like the binomial nomenclature system, Carlos Linnaeus, etc. Who is to say that we're all the same? Who is to say that I am the same as you in some fundamental, essential way? Who told us that? Why do we believe this? Oh, I've got to go. So on the 17th of August, 2017, John the Bond's signing off. And until next time, you guys take care of yourselves. Hi, I'm
Frank McManus from howtotakecareofyourpenis.wordpress.com.
And you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on fakeologist.com.